Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What's Right with Men, a weekly radio program dedicated to exploring and discussing what it means to be a man in a post-feminist world. Now here are your hosts, John Freeman and Roger Wetzel.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to What's Right About Men. Hey, John.
Hi, Roger. Hi, everybody.
Well, today's show is going to be an interesting one, to say the least, because John and I have been talking about this for a while, and it's going to be a show of contrast in some way. Would you agree with that, John, or?
I think it's likely. I guess I'm kind of curious to hear what's going to show up and what people are going to bring to us. I mean, I'm really keen that people will call in and give us their stories and their perceptions, because this is a rich topic.
Yeah, I agree. I think because everybody has a dad, right? And for those of you who were encouraging to call in, I'll give you the number now. It's 347-205-9869. That's 347-205-9869. And before we begin, I want to do our weekly disclaimer that the show may be outrageous, irreverent, controversial, contain mature subject matter and language, and be politically incorrect, but it'll be informative and fun. And, you know, John, this whole thing about the role of father, and it's kind of changing. It's changed a lot in both of our lifetimes. Wouldn't you agree?
I think perceptions are changing a lot. I think it's also kind of, I think fatherhood was always a bit of an unpredictable thing historically, you know, what with men going off to fight wars, and in earlier times, you know, people just didn't live so long. It was always a bit messy in terms of who you might grow up with, but we have a different way of looking at it now, and I think some of that, I'm interested to kind of see how that shows up in the conversations that we have.
Exactly. So before we start, I wanted I was sharing this with John this morning about something that I read recently from Robert Moore, who's done a lot of work. He's a Jungian psychologist, and he wrote a book called King, Warrior, Magician, and Lover, which is a phenomenal book. If you're interested in Jungian psychology and the archetypes that we all have within us. And in his introduction, he says this: we can look at the family system and see the breakdown of the traditional family. More and more families display the sorry fact of the disappearing father, which disappearance through either emotional or physical abandonment or both wreaks psychological devastation on the children of both sexes. The weak or absent father cripples both his daughters and his sons' ability to achieve their own gender identity and to relate in an intimate and positive way with members of both their own sex and the opposite sex. And we were having a discussion about this morning, and John, do you want to share anything about what I just read here? Because there's more that I just discovered after a little bit ago that I wanted to share, that I think kind of puts things in a different perspective in that regard to that comment.
Yeah, I'd like you to carry on, and I'll hold my comments for the moment.
Okay. His idea is that there's two factors in regards to fatherhood and how it affects each of us in different ways. And his first thing is that he believes that we seriously need to take a look at the disappearance of ritual processes that initiate boys into manhood, right? And in one part of his book, he says, in the case of men, there are many who either had no initiation into manhood or had pseudo-initiations that failed to evoke the needed transition into adulthood, and thus we get the dominance of boy psychology. And the second thing that he talks about, the second factor he believes, has to do with patriarchy and how that word has been thrown around and how it's been looked down upon for all of the unhealthy expressions over the thousands of years that it's dominated the planet. And he says that patriarchy is not the expression of deep-rooted masculinity. He says truly deep and rooted masculinity is not abusive. Patriarchy is the expression of the immature masculine. It's the expression of boy psychology and in part the shadow or crazy side of masculinity, and it expresses the stunted masculine fixated at immature levels. And for me, I think that in and of itself is the big issue that we as men need to look at for ourselves, and also how we express ourselves and carry ourselves in the world moving forward.
Well, if you're saying that he's telling us that being a man means really kind of being a grown up inside and not just in body, then I'm not about to challenge that.
But don't you think that what he's talking about is the archetypes of being a male, that king, warrior, lover, magician idea, that plays a huge impact on that, what he calls boy psychology. I mean, I think it's huge.
It's too simple for me, that, because you know if you're going to be in the king archetype, then there has to be the combination of the expression of power and the expression of taking care of the subjects, kind of thing. And so that's not as easy a trick to pull off, I think, as it sounds when you just kind of describe it that way, that
I don't think it's an easy process at all, because it's a long process. It's a healing process. It's a going into that, you know, like on our first show, the guy called and said there's no dragons to slay anymore. And if you recall, I said, yeah, I think there are. The dragons are within us, right? And I think that this kind of work, I mean, on the surface of it, it is pretty easy to just say, oh, well, if we just did this, then this would be the positive result. But no, it's dirty work. It's hard work. That's how I kind of see it.
Well, that's for sure. But for me, I think what you say is true, and it's also that I wouldn't agree with that caller about there not being any dragons to slay. I think the problem that we now have is that most of the dragons that we're facing, they're collective dragons, and we actually the individual hero in the old model that would slay those dragons, that doesn't work anymore. You know, there's quite an interesting paper out at the moment about what it takes to be leaders and how the great leaders are anti-heroes. And they're anti-heroes in the sense that they have to be able to do the heroic work by their collaboration with others, because one person can't do it on their own. We've got big world problems that we have to be able to solve together. And that works in families too, the way I see
absolutely.
It. So, you know, the world is more complicated than it used to be. You know, we might all like it to be simpler, but actually, it's all the stuff we know. The pace of change and the challenges that we face, wherever we look, whether they're personal or whether they're in business or whether they're, you know, environmental and political, it's a messy situation, and it's going to take new kinds of men and new kinds of fathers to equip us for that. And, you know, it'd be really interesting to hear what people's experiences of fatherhood have been, and to talk about some of that.
That was awesome. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that, but it also takes each one of us doing our part, like in a family unit or in a work environment, for those things to be healthy and operate. We all have to do our piece. We all have to do that work, and then come out the other side, creating something new that works for people in the best ways that it can. You know, but I'm glad that you kind of said that, because you gave me a really good segue, because we have a guest today who, you know, in looking at fathers and relationships with sons, it struck me over the weekend that I wanted to have someone on who could share with us their experience of growing up as a son in a household. And that would be my brother. So I'd like to bring him on right now and have a conversation with him about what it was like to grow up and with the parents that we both shared. And he'll give you his perspective of things, and then I'll share a little bit of mine. And then we really would like to hear some have some people call in and share their thoughts on, you know, the father-son, father-daughter dynamic, and how that affected them, how it affected their family, and how it's affected them throughout their life. So let me give out that number now. It's 347-205-9869. So do we have Scott on the line?
Hello. Hi, Roger, and thanks for having me on. Hi, John. I was kind of interested listening to what you were saying about how things change and how fatherhood has changed, because I think in our family there's a change between, you know, there's 10 years difference between our ages. And I saw changes between what your experiences were and what my experiences were because of the changes, you know, the difference between being raised in the 60s and being raised in the 70s. And the sort of the change in society during that time. But I think we have, you know, we have the same parents or the same family dynamic, but I think we have slightly different experiences because of that. You know, I mean, you and our sister left home when I was 11 years old. And so from that point on, I was kind of an only child. They had the experience that raising you guys before they got to me. So they were older, more mellow, things like that were different. And I don't know, you know, I was just thinking while I was listening to what you were saying, that when I was a kid, when I was, you know, 12, 13, Dad did the cooking a lot of the times. He did all the laundry because Mom went back to work. And I don't think that that was your experience at all.
You know, let me stop you right there for a second. It's so interesting because growing up in a family, and I discovered this too in a conversation, John, with my sister back in last November, you know, the way that she and I were raised, I don't even know if we had actually the same parents just listening to what I heard here. But it was like we lived in silos. You know, she lived in her silo and I lived in my silo. And we both had impressions and ideas of the other one based on living in our own little contained silo that were completely wrong, right? It was like these, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it right now. We just had these wrong ideas, basically. And Scott, when you just said that Dad did a lot of the cooking and cleaning and laundry, I never saw him cook a meal, and I never saw him do a load of laundry in my entire life.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, when I got older and I was in college, they were getting ready to retire, and he and I lived together essentially 9 months of the year because they were, you know, mom had moved back to sort of set up their retirement home. And so when he was working, it was just the two of us, and he cooked every night. And, you know, it's just a completely different experience, I think. And you know, I'm not sure. I think a lot of it has to do with the times changing and sort of the view of what it was to be a father. I mean, I didn't live through it, but in the 50s and 60s, it seems like, you know, the perception that I have is that, there was the father that went out and made a living and came home. And don't bother me, kids. I'm relaxing. I'm going to have a drink and, you know, go do whatever you're going to do. Leave me alone. I did my part by bringing home the paycheck. And,
right.
And I know people even today that are like that. But but I think that, you know, my sort of coming of age was at a time when that was changing a little bit in society. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that probably played an interesting part of it, which I didn't really think about until now. But let me, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
As you were growing up a boy in that environment and in your relationship with dad, were you can you tell us what it was like as far as being able to, were you able to express yourself when you were angry or, and can you give us some examples or just a couple of ideas of interactions that you had with him?
Yeah, actually, I think, again, it's kind of the change. As I got older, I felt more comfortable expressing myself. And anger was never something that was shunned. You know, if you were angry, it was okay to talk about it. It wasn't necessarily the best thing to talk about, you know, touchy-feely kind of things, but if you were angry, that was okay. They were prepared to handle anger. Something that's kind of interesting related to that is that I was thinking about this after you talked to me about it the other day, and when I was growing up, one of the things that kind of embarrassed me, I guess, was that Dad was very emotional. when something was on TV, he would get choked up, or he was talking to people, you know, he would be very, touchy-feely, put his arm around people when he's talking to them, and that always made me a little uncomfortable. I wasn't that way, and it was a little bit embarrassing at times. And as I've grown older, I can, you know, I'm getting more and more like that. I think about that a lot, that, you know, with my daughter, that's, I'm doing a lot of those same things. But again, I never felt that I couldn't talk. As I got older, in one-on-one interactions with him, I never had a problem. When other people got around, that was a different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there was a lot of times that we spent just the two of us. And we communicated very well then, but you throw in mom or you throw somebody else into the situation and the tension, you know, was ratcheted up and we didn't communicate very well.
Interesting. So let me ask you another question. As you were growing up, did you feel like you were loved and supported in whatever it is, in any kind of way or in every kind of way?
Yes and no. I did feel supported, but I also felt that there were things that were expected, and if I did the expected things, then the support and the love was there. If I didn't do the things that were expected, and I'm not talking about, you know, writing on the walls or anything like that, doing the typical kid stuff, that if I strayed from what was expected, then there was sort of there would be some repercussions in terms of how I was being interacted with. You know, there would be more anger, there would be more frustration, there would be silence if I didn't do sort of the plan, follow the plan.
So let me ask you then a follow-up question in regard to that. when you didn't do what you were expected, and there was like that a level of anger and frustration. Was there any physicality, any physical stuff that went on, or was it verbal?
No, it was always verbal. There was never any physical stuff at all.
Okay, so I want to ask you two more questions, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my experience.
Okay.
So do you think that in your relationship with him that he prepared you to be a husband and father?
You know, I would guess I would say yes. I don't really have any frame of reference for that, to know what would have been better or would have been worse. I can tell you that I wasn't ready to be a father for a long time. You know, I have a 1-year-old now, and I wasn't ready for that until recently. And there was a lot of stuff that I went through. You know, I went through counseling for a few years to deal with some of the things because I wasn't feeling like I was prepared for those kinds of commitments and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say yes, but like I said, I don't have any other frame of reference to say it could have been better this way or that way. That was my experience.
Okay. One other question, I didn't put this on the list, but I want to ask you because it came up for me this morning. You're now a father, and
uh-huh.
Just share with us kind of your perspective of being a father. And I know, like I was sharing with John, what your situation is in regard to work and what you do with her and all of those kind of things. So can you just give us a brief picture of that?
Well, I'm lucky enough that my job has some flexibility time-wise. And so for the first year that she was, well, she was born last May. So for her first year, for the first 6 months, she went to work with me 2 days a week. And then starting in January up until today, she goes to work with me on Fridays. So my office has a playpen and it has a little swing. And when people come in, they laugh and they say it looks like a daycare center. But what's interesting is that it's not unusual, and I kind of like that. It's not I'm not an oddity where I work. People don't come in and say, "Oh, look, there's a kid." You know, she has her fans. There are people that will come in when they know that she's there. They'll come in and say hi to her and things. And it's just been really good for us. I think in some respects, because I spend more time with her, I'm as good a parent as her mother is, in terms of knowing what's bothering her and things like that. And I really enjoy it. I can't imagine being in a situation, like I said, I'm very lucky that I have this opportunity, but to not be involved in a child's life on a daily basis, I just can't imagine what that, how that would feel, And I know a lot of people who don't really have anything to do with their kids, people I work with, And so it's been really good for the two of us. We've had a lot of bonding time.
That's awesome.
I've been really lucky.
Great. Well, the reason I had you on is because I knew that there was going to be some kind of contrast, but I didn't really know how much of a contrast there would be. And so, again, let me, I'm just going to give you a quick kind of overview of my situation. But before I do that, I want to encourage people to call in and share their thoughts, feelings, experiences at 347-205-9869. Scott, it's interesting that you talked about growing up when you did, because that was never anything that entered my mind until you just brought it up. I mean, I was born in 1955, you were born in 1965. So by the time you got to a certain age, societally, things had shifted dramatically from from back when I was growing up. But it's like I said earlier, I never saw him wash a dish, cook a meal, do a load of laundry, any of that kind of thing. I never had a conversation with him about anything meaningful in my life. It was a pretty much of an interesting relationship in that it was constantly adversarial, and it wasn't a two-way street. It was a one-way street, and I was like, it was like getting hit by a bus almost every single day. And I remember asking an aunt of ours about 3 years ago what it was like when they would be around, because they lived in Northern California. So I just asked her, I said, what was it like being around when I was young and, you know, that relationship with me and my dad? And she said, and I don't know why I'm getting emotional about this, but she said he was brutal. And we wished he would get drunk and pass out so he would leave you alone. And so, you know, in my conversation with John this morning, he was talking about when he was a teenager and he would, you know, he would get into some trouble or, you know, cause trouble or whatever. It was like I never had that option, because it was like I was always on guard, because I never knew where he was going to come from. And I realized probably maybe two years ago that I suffered from PTSD, and I didn't even know it. I mean, I look back now and I look at just, it was ridiculous, you know? But that was my relationship with him, you know? And there was things that Linda will tell us, who's our sister, that she will bring up, that I have no memory or recall of. And another friend of mine who's, I've been friends with him since we were 10, he fills me in on gaps of things that I don't remember growing up either. And so I think it affected me in a lot of, you know, tremendously. I think it's why, you know, I went into therapy. I think it's why I went back to college to get my degree to become a therapist. And it was that, you know, that drive to, like, uncover all of those things that were, you know, piled upon me and those kind of things. And the thing that I'm, I think right now, the thing I'm most pleased with is to hear your relationship and how he was with you, that he wasn't like that, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I wasn't around. I remember a few times when I was really young, you guys wrestling in the living room and things like that, you know, threatening to cut your hair and stuff, and I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I didn't obviously understand any of that. But I think also it the experience probably for him in terms of being a parent changed him a lot, because coming from his background where his father was abusive and an alcoholic and his mother was as cold and distant a person as I've ever met. You know, so they sent him away to high school, to military school at 15, because they didn't want to deal with him anymore. So I think that changed him. I think interacting with you changed him a lot. And I never discussed it with him, but I know from talking to him about other things that he regretted a lot of the things that happened, because mm-hmm. when Linda had her kid and her kids would misbehave, she would threaten them with, I'm going to tell Grandpa on you and he's going to get you, instead of taking care of the problem or having her husband take care of the problem. And it drove him crazy. He's like, I don't want to be the bad guy. I've done that, and I don't like it, and I don't want to be that person, and I don't want to be that one that has to be the disciplinarian. And, you know, I listening to what you're saying, it's hard for me to even identify with it, but I know that it happened. You know, I mean, I don't doubt that that's what it was like, because I did see some of that when I was really young. It's such a different experience than what I had with the same people.
Go ahead.
It's awful that you had to go through that. I can't even imagine how bad that must have been.
You know, it's one of those things where, obviously it was an issue for a lot of years, but I think that it's one of those things where it's like, you know what? It's like, I was involved in that. What happened and what took place isn't right. It'll never be justified, but it's what happened. And I think that in a lot of ways, it made me who I am today. It changed me as when I became a father in a positive way. And so, you know, it's just everybody has their experience of life, and it's different. And, you know, John, you know, can you kind of just give us a brief idea of what it was like for you growing up with a father? Because I know you have your experience, and it's not like mine.
It's possibly a little bit more like Scott's in some ways. But I mean, I feel very privileged, and I want to thank you both for being so willing to be open and to share all of this with us, because, you know, it goes into, you know, some tender and vulnerable areas. And for me, my father was kind of distant. And I recognize the picture of, you know, somebody who had a mother who was extremely cool in her way of being. And so I see in him towards me a kind of, I know very well now that he really did love me. But demonstration of that as a child was, you know, that I didn't get to see that. And I'm very aware for myself, even of how that has affected the way I've been with my sons, that being demonstrative is really quite a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's one of the things I find that's an interesting piece of how children are with parents and the decisions that we all make. I have in my head there's a cartoon by a woman called Posy Simmons over here, which shows three or four generations of women, and there's a kind of a grandmother talking about the great grandmother and saying, oh, you know, she was so distant. I really made the decision that I was going to give my daughter all the love I possibly could. And then there's that daughter, and she's talking about her experience of being mothered and saying, oh, I felt completely suffocated, and the thing that I vowed I would never do was to do that to my daughter. And, of course, the daughter, you know, feels that her mother was was distant, and that she didn't get the love that she thought she should have had. And I see this in sort of strange contrast of what we do that's like our parents and what we do that's in kind of, I'm not going to do it like that. That didn't work for me.
Right. It's like going from one, it's like that pendulum going from one extreme to the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I'm going to do the complete opposite of what this person did because I felt, you know, my experience was so horrible. And then, you know, when they get in that position, I mean, you know, it's the opposite.
But it's also interesting to hear in relation to the experience of the two of you, how your father kind of did the pendulum for himself to the extent that you have, you know, it's almost like you've grown up in two different families. But I also kind of feel like I want to ask you each the question, do you think there was anything that was different about who you each are as individuals that might have been what brought out the different sides of him?
You know, I, for me to answer that, I can only draw on input that I've gotten from my best friend, who I mentioned earlier, who I've known since I was 10. And last year when I was staying with him for a few weeks, we were having a discussion about something, you know, along these lines, and I said, I didn't understand it, you know, I still don't. And it was interesting because he said to me, you know, your father was highly competitive with you, and you were a threat to him. He said, and I could see it as we were growing older. Like, you were better at him than a lot of things, right? And it pissed him off, right? And so that's the only thing that I can, that's the only answer I can give you, because I don't, like I said earlier, there's so many blank spots in my life growing up that I can't even remember.
Yeah, and it's a tough question to ask, because from where you are, it's not easy to see that. But I took the risk of asking it anyway, and I'm going to say, you know, Scott, do you have anything in response to it?
Yeah, I do. This will sound, I don't mean to sound flippant, but I think a lot of that was that I wasn't Roger. Honestly, there was plenty of times when I was growing up where, you know, after he had moved out and my sister had moved out and I was, you know, at home with my parents, that there was plenty of times where it was, that the comment was, you know, don't be like your brother, or, you know, you're going to end up like your brother. And I think that the fact that we were different, and I think played into a big part of that. And I, like I said, I don't want to sound flippant, but I think the fact that I wasn't him made a difference. I don't think there was anything, I can't think of anything specifically about me that would make it different, but that was what sort of, when you asked that question, it's the first thing I thought of.
Right. I mean, I guess where the question came from for me is I haven't had a brother, and what I do know is my experience in two areas. One is of having had children and realizing how from day one they were just different temperaments, just different people,
right,
to whom,
right,
I, you know, who drew different responses from those around them. And that I observed that in other families, like that you can have you can have two or three children in a family, and it's almost, did these come from the same parents? Because they are just, they're that different from very early on, and then they get more different in because they respond to each other, and they kind of, they grow towards each other in areas, and then they grow apart from each other in other areas. And there's this kind of wonderful tapestry that we weave, and it's actually pretty rich.
Yeah, and you know, I remember the two things about that. I think that, you know, because of the age difference that exists with us, you know, the interesting thing is that we're more alike, I think, than we know, than we've ever, that we've even discussed, even though we're 10 years apart. But at the same time, it's like, you're right. It's that whole way of looking at your kids, right, as parents, and the expectations, especially of fathers, that they have on their sons about how they're supposed to be. And, you know, the thing that I always got was, when I was your age, I was married and had a job and had kids, and, you know, when are you going to do that? And blah, 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 blah. And saying, well, I'm not you. And at the same time, I mean, when Scott was young, he was always the smartest one in the family. And that was like a constant, right? It's like, even when he was like 5 or 6, oh, look how smart he is, look how smart he is, look how smart he is, right? It's like, I was 28 years old until somebody out of my family told me I was smart. It was like the first time, you know, and I ended up going to college and getting a master's degree. So I guess I got that gene too, but it was the messages that were given as well, you know, as in addition to the personalities. you know.
Yeah, and I got those messages too, and I, to be honest with you, I was always uncomfortable with it. It seemed like it put extra pressure on me, and it made me uncomfortable and embarrassed me. So I didn't like that either.
Yeah.
Right. We're having such a wonderful time, you know, having this conversation between the three of us, but I do want to encourage other people to feel that there's space to ring in and to remind you of the number being 347-205-9869, because I have the notion that this might be, you know, triggering some thoughts for people, either for men about their fathers and sons or for the women listeners about what they've noticed with, you know, their husbands and sons or brothers and fathers and all of that. So it would be still, it would be wonderful. And I think we may have a caller coming in. So it would be lovely to hear.
Now, actually, I think we might be having a technical difficulty.
Oh, really?
I think we've lost. we're kind of floating in space right now, and the fact that we've lost connection with our producer who puts the calls through to us. So I think right now we're kind of on our own.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Well, that
will
be.
No, you're not on your own. I'm right here. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. You're just not logged into Skype, so you're not seeing my messages. That's all.
All right. If anyone, we encourage people to call in and share what their perspective is on the father relationship and how it's affected them. And I think, you know, also the important thing to remember is that, like, those relationships, like the relationships that we're talking about, that Scott and I shared, having the same father, not only impacted us individually, they impacted, like, every person that we've ever had any kind of dealings with. Because I think that, for me anyway, I believe that, you know, how you see the world, how you interact with other people, is hugely impacted by those primary relationships as you're growing up, you know. And speaking for me, I mean, John, earlier you made a comment, and it's like, I thought to myself, Jesus, I'm lucky I didn't turn into like some crazed mass murderer, given the way that I was, you know, the things that happened to me. I mean, I think the only thing I can attribute it to is that I survived to the, and I had this inner spirit that wasn't, you know, that as bad as things got, I wasn't going to be crushed, and it just wasn't going to happen. And so I think for me, it's in a lot of ways, I used my anger for a lot of years as motivation. And
I suspect that's a very, very, very common story, and it goes to one of the other places that I have a lot of questions around this whole area of parenting. It's like how much of what we grow up to be is because of our parenting, and how much is in spite of our parenting, and you know what. Wondering what listeners might be feeling about, well, you know, did this experience make me who I am, and was it actually what I needed that I got that parenting, even though it was uncomfortable and I didn't like it, and it wouldn't have been what I might have asked for. I mean, I'm saying that from a place where, you know, I feel that what I got from my father, although I can see plenty of downsides, and I went through periods where I didn't see much besides the downsides. I can now see that so much of what I needed and that helped me become who I think, you know, it was natural to me to be, I actually did get I did get from him in ways that I didn't recognize until quite a lot later.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I, you know, it's like, you know, and looking at myself in regard to that, you know, it's like those are things that happened. And they happen to a lot of people around the world, and worse things happen than happen to me. But at the same time, I look at it and I go, okay, there's certain things that I got growing up that are positive, right? That make me who I am, and that allow me to navigate in the world as I do, and so I'm really grateful for that. The other stuff, you know, it's like Carolyn Mace talks about therapy, right? And how therapy is about, you know, you get in a boat on one side of the lake, and it's the purpose is to get to the other side of the lake. And when you get there, you know, you're a different person, and you have new insights and all that stuff. But what happens is people go out to the middle of the lake, and then they just go in circles, and they identify with their wound, and it's like, oh, this happened to me like 50 years ago, and that becomes their identity. There is none of that for me. It's like what it was what it was, and it's like I've moved on, and I'm better for it, and I'm a better man for it. But you know, given what you're saying, John, I want to ask Scott, you know, now that you're a father, how do you see yourself? How do you see those that impact of growing up, and how is that how is that impacting you being a father, and the ways that you see your role in relationship to your daughter and your wife and all of those kind of things?
Well, I think as John was saying, some of the things that you get are examples to follow, and others are examples to avoid. You can learn as much from the good examples as the poor examples. And, you know, for example, I have made a decision, and I'm so far I've been able to stick to it. I'm not going to ever yell. Like, there's no screaming involved. There's no physical, you know, hitting or anything like that, because I know for myself it doesn't make any difference. I just turn off when people yell at me. And so and that wasn't my experience growing up. I mean, I didn't have the physical stuff, but there was a lot of yelling. And also, I am trying to understand what she's going through rather than how it's impacting me. You know, if she's frustrated and having a temper tantrum, why is she having a temper tantrum instead of screaming at her or making her go sit someplace and be quiet, stop bothering me? So I think those are, you know, I can't give you more definitive answers than that, but those are the kinds of things that I learned. There are good things, and there are things that I didn't think worked well when I was a kid and I didn't enjoy, and I'm not doing those.
That's beautiful.
Mm. Yes, it is, and I notice so much in the conversations that we can have and that I hear other people have around their parents, that we do have a choice. You know, I'm very aware of how many stories there are in the world of people who've had what look like very, very similar upbringings and parenting experiences, or even other experiences. And, you know, they've had the same traumas to deal with, and we have a choice. You know, that there is a place where we need to not allow ourselves to become victims of whatever it was that happened to us, and to recognize that, okay, this, you know, shit happens, this happened, and now I have a choice of who am I going to be, and what am I going to do with that, and how am I going to evaluate that experience, and how do I choose to grow with it? And in the sense that, I really appreciate what you just had to say, Scott, in the sense that, you know, you've made a choice about how you will be with your daughter. And, you know, in 25 years' time, she may be, you know, saying to you, oh, I wish you'd been a bit sterner with me. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like you have every right to make that choice and live by it. And it's okay because, you know, we'll all come out of the other side. And there isn't such a thing as a perfect parent any more than there's such a thing as a perfect human being. And it's quite good to let ourselves off the hook of thinking that maybe there is and that that's what we're supposed to be in trying to find that perfect thing to be when really we just need to be the best of us.
You mean I can relax now? I don't have to try and be perfect? You know,
you already are perfect, Roger.
Oh, thank you. You know, as you were talking, I'm thinking about what Scott just said about being a parent, and I'm thinking about my, myself in regard to being a parent. And it's interesting because what I'm hearing is Scott is, and I guess we all do this, or maybe we don't, but I think he's made the conscious choices based on what he knows now. I mean, you know, Scott, you're a father. How old were you, 47?
47 when she was born, yeah. So I think that makes a huge difference. If I was 25, I would have a completely different outlook on life. I know that. And things would be so much different than they are now. I'm a lot more calm. I dealt with my anger issues. I don't have those anymore. And so there isn't any of that to take out on somebody. At 25 or 30, I would have been completely different. I would have been, you know, a lot angrier and screamed a lot more and things like that.
Well, I was 24 when my daughter was born. And, you know, given my track record, it's amazing that we have the relationship that we have, which is a really, really good one. And the thing, even though, you know, her mother and I divorced when she was three, I was always in her life. I mean, there was, you know, it's like, you know, and for those fathers out there or people who look at, you know, the whole issue of child support, which I have no tolerance for any father that doesn't take responsibility for their kids. I mean, that was a huge thing for me. I mean, that was my daughter. But at the same time, you know, I think that I made the choice to say, okay, I am not going to raise my daughter the way that I was raised, and thank God for that, and because she would have, you know, I mean, she's probably a mess now, and she's listening, so that's a joke, but at the same time, she would have had huge issues to deal with because of me, because I was, you know, like, Scott, you made that choice to wait till you had kids older, which is brilliant, you know. Most people aren't that conscious and aware to say, you know what, it wouldn't be good for me to be a parent given the circumstances and given my, my psychoses at the time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I had to get my own shit worked out before that. You know, I didn't want to inflict that on somebody else.
Yeah. And,
I've got a question in the chat box, which is asked, what was your mother like in this dynamic with your father? And I guess there might be two different answers to that too.
I'll go first. Codependent. I mean, I think that there were behaviors that, and see, when I say that, I don't know what her history was growing up, and I don't know how she was raised. So, I'm just like putting it out there, and you know, having half of the information, but in my experience, it was one of those things where there would be times where she was nutty, but she used the wait till your father gets home card, right? There were a couple of times where she took matters into her own hands. but she was codependent and never, ever, ever did I see her say anything to say, hey, what are you doing? You need to stop it. You don't, you know, whatever. She was a part of it. She was, you know. So that was my experience of her.
And I guess, my experience was that my dad and I got along really very well, and if my mom wasn't around. And then if my mom was around, there was conflict between the two of us, and he would always jump in on her side, you know, which was a smart thing to do, since he was married to her. But then it became an issue with, that was when we had our biggest problems, was when my mom was around and would get into things. Like, I had a girlfriend in college that ultimately they didn't approve of, but he met her and he was really nice to her. And then my mom found out that I was dating this girl, and it was a different racial situation, and she was very unhappy and upset about it, and that changed his attitude about things. So it's kind of the opposite of what Roger was describing, where she was almost the dominant person in that kind of a situation.
Okay, we're kind of getting towards the end of the show, but we've just about got time to ask a follow-up question of each of you, which is, so how did what you've just said, how did that affect your relationship with women as you see it now?
tremendously. I mean, I was labeled, and it's actually why it's the working title of the book that I'm working on, but I was labeled years ago by my ex-wife that I was an intimacy invalid. And I don't take exception with that. Excuse me. I think that for years I was a mess, you know, and until I got to the place not too recently where it's, you know what, I need to love myself. And when I got to that place of, you know, that recognition and being able to do that, it was then that things started to shift for me, and I was able to open up more and to where I am. I think I'm the healthiest that I've ever been in relationship, in relation to women. So, Scott?
Thanks, Scott.
You know, that's a difficult question for me to even think about and to address, because I think it's not just women, it's everybody. I've always been very sort of standoffish and sort of built a wall that I don't allow a lot of people to get close. And it's one of those things where I wish I could, and I see other people doing it, and I wish I was like that, but I'm not. And, you know, so it has affected all relationships, basically. Not just with women, where I keep people at arm's length, and I think a lot of that has to do with the interactions that I had growing up.
Hmm. Thank you, Scott. I recognize what you're saying as being true for me. I want to thank you very much for coming on and joining us on this show, and I want to thank both of you for your openness in the conversation we've had. Roger, I want to give you the last few seconds to tell people about our guest for next week.
Yeah, next week we're going to be doing a show on what is it that women want from men in relationship. And we're going to have a guest, Dale Bach, who's an author of a book called Mama Trauma. She's a motivational speaker, a licensed agape spiritual practitioner, and has her master's degree in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. And we invite everybody to join us in that show, because it's going to be a good one. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Take care.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye till then.